Good morning. I'm Raquel with my co-host
Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. We are two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel and telling the story of ordinary people loving, supporting, and living in an extraordinary land. Israel is real. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
Shalom to all our listeners from WSMN 1590 Nashua's News and Talk. We are a community-supported program. We're on the air because you love Israel and you love what we're doing. So please keep the donations coming. If you'd like to advertise as well, you can reach us at www.israelisreal.weebly.com. I know it's kind of weird, but there it is. Israelisreal.weebly.com. Or you can email us at israelisreal1590@gmail.com. israelisreal1590@gmail.com. Vision.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about the Vision educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website, www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
Boker tov, Lasonia.
Boker tov, Rachel.
First of all, I'd like to start our show, and this is a little unconventional, but I'd like to say happy birthday to my daughter, Inbal, who had her birthday yesterday.
Ad
Mea Vesrim, 22 years old today, living in Israel. Kol hakavod.
Kol hakavod.
Keep up the good work to Inbal. Also to her aunt, Daniela, and to her grandpa, Saba Sam. Sorry, I just had to get all that in there. We are getting some questions sometimes, people wondering who we are. We're staying mysterious. We thought we'd stay mysterious. But though people are asking us a little bit who we are. And so before we have our guest today, we thought we'd tell you a little bit of something every week because we do have wonderful guests and we don't want to take away from that. We had a question and... the question was, how about telling us something about the medical advances in Israel? And I will say that we are going to devote a show to that at some point. But at the moment, I'd love to read you a story. Oh, we've got, she's showing me we've got a book about the medical advances and progress and all sorts of innovations in Israel. And we will get to that. But I'd like to tell you a heartwarming story that we received from one of our listeners, Marty, in Israel. And he writes, a friend at work told me a cute story today that I thought you might find interesting and perhaps useful on your radio show. And we do. His son is in the army, and he was having some medical problems, so they sent him from where he was stationed, which was up north near the Lebanese border, to a hospital in Safed, or Safed, as some people know it, to do some tests. After he completed the tests, and by the way, everything was okay, they were ready to discharge him. And it was midnight by then, and as he was standing in the hallway, trying to figure out what to do, the head of the hospital, the chief doctor, called him over and said, "Hey, get your stuff, you're coming with me." And the young soldier said, "But why?" And the doctor said, "Well, it's late, and you're coming home with me for the night, and then in the morning you can get back to your base." And he says, where else but in Israel would the head of a hospital invite someone home for the night just because it was late? Keep up the good work from Marty. And I'd like to thank Marty
for this wonderful story.
It's
not about the medicine, it's about the people in Israel. And this is the beauty of the story.
This is exactly how it works in Israel. And this is, if you know, we're thinking about the medical advances, I think this is one of the most advanced things that we could talk about is the personal relationship that you achieve in Israel with your doctors, with you know, anybody who's
exactly
everybody's family, and that's how you're treated. Every week we have a Hebrew word, and George was just telling us that some of you are actually learning some real Hebrew words. He was testing you this morning. And so we're very proud and very happy that you're listening and learning some words. So we have a new word today, tikkun. Tikkun olam.
Well, we will start first with tikkun, which means repair, correction, amendment, improvement, regulation, reformation. And then olam, which means world. And together, it's like to fix the world, putting the world aright, reforming the universe. And my observation is, in the condition, we know right from wrong.
And that's exactly, I think, what we're going to learn about today with our fabulous guest and Mr. Dexter Van Zyl, our distinguished guest today, was the Christian Outreach Director for the David Project Center for Jewish Leadership. He was a member of the Executive Committee of Christians for Fair Witness on the Middle East. And today, he is the Christian Media Analyst for CAMRA, the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America. And the website for that, by the way, is www.camra.org, just like the camera.
Exactly.
Mr. Van Zyl is devoted to promoting accurate and balanced coverage of Israel and the Middle East through researching and monitoring the media. Shalom and Boker Tov, Mr. Van Zyl. Should I call you Dexter?
Yeah, that's good. Thanks very much.
Dexter.
Good morning.
We have actually, we kind of wrote a book for our first question. And if you don't mind, we're going to start with that long question.
Go right ahead.
Okay, for 2,000 years, Christianity has chased me down, persecuted me, murdered me, burned me, humiliated me, dishonored me, raped me, stolen my assets, didn't acknowledge me as a Jew or allow me to be what I am, a Jew. Threw me out of my home and homeland, and in the end has demanded me to leave my birthplace and in the land and the land of my ancestor, which I did. Now, after 2,000 years, when the Jewish nation has a Jewish state, more or less in the same geographical borders, we, the Jews, are still paying. For what and why? Why is still happening to us? Are they pushing us again into another crematorium? Where is the shame in all of this? Where is God in all of this? Is God simply closing God's eyes to all of this? How can our leaders, religious and otherwise, think that they are teaching morality? How can one consider him capable of being a moral example when such injustice is allowed to exist without criticism or moral judgment? What can this so-called moral majority say to me after one of my friends is murdered together with her family, her father, her husband, her son, and she herself in their own home for the sole reason that they are Jewish? Do any of these same people actually know the difference between an Israeli and a Palestinian, just like do they know the difference between a Tutsi and a Zulu? The difference is that with the Tutsi and the Zulu, we are not saying which is wrong and which is right. If we believe we are created in God's image, then we believe we are a moral being. But who is the one who has paid the price for the absence of living according to his belief? Is it only the Jews who are required to be judged in front of the whole world and furthermore by standards that no one else in this whole world is required to live by or to defend himself or to survive by? Will the same people go after Pakistan? After all, both states were established in the same year, 1948. Why only the Jews? Why are the Jews always paying the price? Let's be honest and call this by what it really is. Antisemitism.
Did you get all of that?
Yeah, I got it all. And it was you know, when I heard it, one of the things that I have to acknowledge is that basically, you know, the continued existence of the Jewish people has been a threat to the Christian nomos or the Christian faith for a lot of people for a long time. And I think that if you want to kind of look at the history of antisemitism over the past 2,000 years, I think you can say that, first of all, the Jewish people were regarded as a threat to the Christian faith. And then with emancipation, particularly in Western Europe, the Jewish people were regarded as a threat to the nation state system or the nation state wherever they lived. That was why Hitler called them the backstabbers. And I think right now we're in a period of history where basically the Jewish people are being portrayed as a threat to the international system through the existence of their homeland in Israel. And I think this is one of the troubling aspects, is that what we've seen is that basically hostility towards towards the Jewish people has been able to manifest itself or adapt to whatever historical circumstances the world happens to be going through. And I think right now the world is going through a historical bottleneck. We're facing difficulties in how to deal with militant Islam or fundamentalist Islam. And I think there are a lot of people are having a difficult time understanding or figuring out a way to respond to that threat. And one of the things that I think we can say is that the Jewish people have been the people who go through historical bottlenecks first. I think if you look at what happened in Europe, there was basically kind of a response to modernity. There was a kind of a shock after World War I. And I think people had a difficult time somehow adapting to the incipient globalization that was taking place, and also the change to a much more robust capitalist system. And what happened was is that the hostility and all of the problems were basically heaped on the Jewish people at the time. And I think right now, you know, and what happened was is that the Jewish people may be the only people who are not the only people who go through these bottlenecks, but they're the first people who go through these bottlenecks. And I think what we're looking at is that basically we've got and I don't like the phrase Islamofascism because I think it offends a lot of people who might very well be sympathetic to fighting the authoritarianism we see. But we see basically a violent mass movement in groups like Hamas and Hezbollah that basically have decided that the Jewish people are their enemy and that the way that they can achieve some sort of utopia is to demonize the Jews and to demonize Israel and to seek the destruction of both.
Demonization of the Jews is so difficult to understand. It's centuries old. It seems embedded. And it's something that needs to stop. We keep bringing guests on who we talk about this every week, it seems. But we don't understand where this comes from. And it seems to be a revival of all the time that, you know, we had a Hitler. We had a Nasser. We had all sorts of, you know, those kinds of people. Well, we're going to have to save this for a moment. We've got to cut to a break. But when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Dexter Van Zyl of CAMRA. That's www.camra.org. And we're going to cut for a break.
1590 WSMN.
And WSMNradio.com.
Why CNN is in trouble. I'm Bill O'Reilly. The Talking Points memo is next. Save up to 50% off your heating costs with the original SunHeat electronic zone heating systems. SunHeat is safe, comfortable, soft heat for any area of your home. No other portable zone heater puts out more heat, period. SunHeat efficiently heats up to 1,000 square feet. It cannot start a fire, and the solid wood cabinet gives it the appearance of fine furniture. Cut your heating cost in half with the original SunHeat electronic zone heating system. For more information, go to sunheat.com.
Do you owe back taxes, being audited? Whatever your tax-related problem, the former IRS agents and tax professionals at Taxmasters can help solve your tax problems today. Call 1-877-202-7222 or go to txmstr.com. Taxmasters will get between you and the IRS. They'll make sure they treat you fairly and treat you with respect. Call Taxmasters right now at 877-202-7222 or go to txmstr.com. Taxmasters will solve your tax problems.
Talking Points respects CNN, generally speaking, although the network has a few nutty commentators, which network doesn't. But overall, CNN provides solid information to the American public and has done so for decades. But now, CNN is in dire trouble. Like many American newspapers, it is having trouble attracting an audience. In October, CNN was fourth in the primetime ratings, and there isn't one program on the network that is successful. They are all poorly rated. But why? I think it's because the CNN business model is obsolete. They rarely are provocative over there, preferring to be cautious in their presentations. In this age of hyper-partisanship, that comes off as boring. And because most Americans get information from the net, there are few surprises coming from CNN. I want CNN to stay around because they are a worthy competitor. But there's trouble. That's a memo. I'm Bill O'Reilly on Westwood One.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Live local talk just for Nashua and just right here. Weekday mornings on 1590 WSMN.
We're back with Israel is Real on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We're your hosts, Rachel
and Sonia,
and we're just two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. We'd really like to remind you to visit our new website at www.israelisreal.weebly.com, israelisreal.weebly.com, where you can hear our archived shows, listen to all of our amazing guests, learn about Israel, and also send us your feedback, and most importantly, find out how to help us stay on the air. So make sure you visit us, israelisreal.weebly.com. And countries depend for much of their success and security on their intellectual prowess and advanced technology. Many companies from here and abroad depend on the patent attorneys at Verne, Main, and Associates to obtain U.S. or global patent protection for their new ideas. Verne, Main, and Associates is an intellectual property law firm right here in Nashua. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Verne, Main, and Associates at their offices on 100 Main Street in Nashua, or you can find them on the web, and it's very important that you do find them on the web, especially if you're an author, composer, or have something that you want to protect, and that's at vernemain.com. VERNMAINE.com, VERNMAINE.com. And we're back with Dexter Van Zyl. He is the Christian media analyst for CAMRA, which is the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, CAMRA.org. And Dexter, you're amazing. Just the things that you have to say. We were just speaking to you. I was curious about you're a Christian, first of all, and you're very also very involved in Christian outreach. And I was wondering if you could tell me and our listeners how you came to love and support Israel so passionately and how that connects with your work in outreach with Christians.
Well, first of all, I grew up as a member of the United Church of Christ, which is a mainline Protestant denomination here in the United States. And you know, I was one of those kids. I went through confirmation class. I was president of my confirmation class, and then graduated from college and came back and started going to church again, became a member of the Board of Deacons and was a chair of the Board of Deacons. And what happened was I got a copy of the denomination's newspaper, and I started to see that basically you could see a lot of articles condemning American foreign policy and condemning Israel, but you didn't see a lot of other statements condemning, for example, the violence in Sudan. And probably most of you listeners know that between 1983 and 2003, about 2 million Christians and animists were murdered by the Muslim-led regime in Khartoum. And for the most part, there was very little commentary about this or very little outrage.
And I think very few people actually know about that.
And so, and since then, you know, another maybe half a million have died in Darfur region of Sudan, and it's largely the same people are responsible for the violence. There's a group of people called the Janjaweed that go in on horseback and kill people in villages, and you know, we've had millions of people who've died on the side of the road of starvation or of illness, and a lot of them have just been killed outright. And right now, I think the progressive community in the United States has started to pay more attention to it, but it took a long time, and it took a lot more time than it probably should have, given the level of violence. And I couldn't understand it, so I wrote an article, a couple of articles, basically, about the church's stance, and I came to the attention of a professor at Boston College by the name of Dennis Hale, who recruited me and asked me if I wanted to go work for a group called the David Project, because he was friends with the founder of that group.
Can you tell us just for a second?
And the David Project is essentially, it was an organization that was founded in 2002 to respond to the ideological assault on Israel that they had seen, particularly, frankly, on the left. You know, the indecent left seemed to align itself with people who were clearly hostile to Israel's existence, and in some instances, you know, had a problem with Jews, quite frankly. And what happened was is that I worked there for about a year and a half, and then I shifted over to CAMRA in 2006, because initially I was hired at the David Project to respond to anti-Israel divestment resolutions that had been passed by mainline Protestant churches, and they were basically put forth by peace activists. And what happened was is that I realized that the books and the magazine articles and the public statements issuing from these churches were a whole other problem in addition to the resolutions that were being passed. It was just the resolutions that were passed at churchwide assemblies every couple of years were just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the books and materials, if you go to CAMRA.org, you'll see one article that I wrote probably about a year ago about a Methodist study guide about the Arab-Israeli conflict that is just astounding, and also a children's book that basically has pictures. The only pictures of Jews or Israelis that you will see will be of Israeli soldiers menacing young Palestinian kids. And this was the image that they put forth of the conflict, and one of the things they would not talk about was the issue of Muslim and Arab hostility towards Jews in the Middle East, mm-hmm. you know? And so eventually that was why I shifted over to CAMRA, because there was a lot more research that, you know, the David Project is an educational organization, and CAMRA does a lot of research, and basically, look, its hallways are just lined with bookshelves, and that was exactly the type of place I needed to go. And so since the middle of 2006, I've been writing pretty extensively about the narrative that mainline churches have offered about the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Wow. I'm stunned, because I know that's going on in the Middle East, you know, the kind of blackout or intentional swaying and education against the Jews. But I didn't realize that the churches were also I'm sure not willingly, but or knowingly, but maybe, yeah. You know, it exists there. And
what happened was is that essentially, you know, Camp David, there was negotiations at Camp David, and the Israelis made an offer, and Arafat said no and refused to make a counteroffer. And what happened was is that after that was the Second Intifada. And essentially the Second Intifada was a campaign of violent suicide attacks where hundreds of Israelis were killed, and eventually, you know, thousands of Palestinians, you know, over 1,000 Israelis were killed, and about 4,000 or 5,000 Palestinians were killed as a result of this violence. And what happened was is that the lies that were used to justify the violence against Israelis at this point in time basically started to head west through the public institutions. If you look at what happened at the Durban conference, it was the UN anti-racism conference in Durban, South Africa, that took place the last week of August, the very first couple of days of September 2001. Essentially, that was an anti-Semitic hate fest. The resolutions that were passed by the so-called human rights and peace community basically condemned Israel for genocide and ethnic cleansing, mm-hmm. okay? And those are false accusations. The idea that somehow the Israelis have perpetrated a genocide against the Palestinians is just laughable, because the Palestinian population has quadrupled over the last, 60 years. So what we saw was that narrative started to go into, it had been in the academy for a long time, and it had also started to make its way through mainline or liberal Protestant churches here in the U.S. And that story was that basically Israel could bring about an end to the violence by basically conceding territory to the Palestinians. It was a notion of Jewish self-reform. The notion that somehow if Israel rendered itself acceptable to groups like Hamas and Hezbollah, that it, ultimately we would see peace in the Middle East. And this was a story that was that came from the Middle East. It was a story that I think came in part from the Jewish peace community, to be honest with you. It came in Israel and also here in the United States. And what happened was is that the mainline churches picked up on this narrative and they said, well, why is Israel not making these concessions? And they said, well, it must have something to do with the national psyche of the Jewish people. They must be either too damaged by the Holocaust or gripped with a hostile view of their own scriptures. There must be something about Judaism. And what they did was they subjected Israeli Jews and also American Jews to a very ferocious investigation or an interrogation. You know, I don't want to get postmodern on your listeners, but they would investigate and interrogate Jewish identity and also Christian Zionist support for Israel, but they would not say a word about the role that Muslim theology about the Jewish people and about the land had played in fomenting violence against Israel.
You're saying so many things. It's you know, I'm actually rendered speechless, you know, from what you say. I wanted to, you're talking about morality, essentially. And I know that earlier this year, in April, you spoke at a rally that was in support of Israel in Boston. I believe it was at Copley Square. And at that rally, I'm going to quote you here. You said, I believe that the creation of the State of Israel in 1948 was a unique moral achievement. And I was struck by that because that statement, unique moral achievement. Today in 2009, because we're looking 61 years after the establishment of the Jewish State of Israel, it seems that the world has lost its moral compass, and we keep talking about this, but it seems rampant today. I wonder if you could enlighten us and our listeners about that statement about Israel being a unique moral achievement and why the atmosphere today seems to be the exact opposite.
Okay. One of the things that I think we've forgotten about what happened after World War II was that Israel's creation answered a very important question, which was, where are the Jewish people going to live? Where are the Jews going to live? And clearly after World War II...
Can I interrupt you for just 1 minute? The reason why that question is asked is because Jews, wherever they were living...
Absolutely. Nobody wanted them. Mm-hmm. There were some instances of Jews trying to return back to Poland after the Holocaust, and they were murdered outside their homes.
In Kielce.
Yeah. I mean, this type of thing, and you know, none of the other liberal democracies that defeated the Axis powers wanted Jews to come to their homes. They didn't want them in their countries. And ultimately, Israel was the one place where it was possible for the Jewish people to gather and basically become responsible for their own safety.
Which at the time actually was known as Palestine.
Right.
And the Jews who came were Palestinian Jews.
Right.
Where everybody there were Palestinians.
Absolutely. And what happened was is that partition was basically going to call for the creation of both a Jewish and an Arab state. And I think the problem is that people have seemed to have forgotten that. And I think that's particularly true with people here in the United States, because they seem to think that the safety that American Jews experience here in the U.S. is somehow par for the course for the Jewish community throughout the world, and that's just not the case. After Israel was created in 1948, essentially the Arab countries and Iran threw about 800,000 Jews out of their countries, and they resided in Israel. Most, you know, about 52% of the Jews who live in Israel right now are either from the Middle East or descendants of people who came from the Middle East. And so, that second exodus, so to speak, I think in many respects helped cemented the legitimacy of the Jewish state. It demonstrated again why Israel was necessary.
Can you address, though, the thing that struck me about what you said, being the creation of the State of Israel being a moral...
Achievement.
Just thinking about the creation of a state as a moral achievement just kind of struck me. I mean, you know, you can create, many states are created. Pakistan was recently created, you know, at the same time Transjordan was created, Syria was created, you know. But that title, moral achievement, doesn't sort of get tagged onto that.
I think the reason why Israel's creation was a moral achievement was that basically a people who had been beleaguered for 2,000 years and had no place to live in safety and could not work for its own well-being were basically, you know, given an opportunity under partition to create a state of their own and exercise their right to self-determination. And I think ultimately, I think all peoples are entitled to the right for self-determination. And I think that's also true for the Palestinians. The problem is that the Palestinians, when they have been offered these opportunities to build a state, have squandered these opportunities. And the Israelis, you know, in 48, you know, what was offered to the Jewish people was not really what they wanted. They wanted more, but mm-hmm. they took what was offered to them and they made the best with what they've got. And I think one of the reasons why Israel has maintained itself as a moral achievement is because essentially Jewish self-criticism and Israeli self-criticism are alive and well. Essentially, the Israeli people have basically understood that they are walking through history under the judgment of heaven and over the consequence and over the canyon of history.
And not afraid to engage in healthy debate, I might add.
Absolutely. And I think one of the concerns that we have is that we don't see that same level of self-criticism and debate on the other side of this conflict. You see a peace movement in Israel. You see Israeli Jews ferociously condemning the state in which they live. But we do not see the same level of criticism of Palestinian leaders by inhabitants of the West Bank or the Gaza Strip. And we don't see the same level of self-correction throughout the Muslim and Arab world. And what has happened is that Israel's enemies have used Jewish self-criticism as a weapon. And they've used it basically as a weapon, like a knife against the throat of the Jewish people. And I think that this is, that's reprehensible. That is just fundamentally reprehensible.
Dexter, we're going to have to cut out for another break. And we'll continue this discussion after the break with Dexter Van Zyl of CAMRA, CAMRA.org. And this is Nashua's News and Talk, WSMN 1590.
1590 WSMN and WSMNradio.com.
Check out what you can now afford to drive at GetAutosNH.com. Search the inventories of local dealerships for both new and used cars, find vehicles within your monthly budget, and make an online offer to buy. That's GetAutosNH.com, the Telegraph's auto website. Local dealers are ready to help you find the vehicle that is a perfect fit for you and your budget. Check out what you can now afford to drive at GetAutosNH.com. GetAutosNH.com, GetAutosNH.com. Search local, buy local.
This week on the Talking Money Show with Ed Benway from the Measured Wealth Private Client Group, Ed will be joined with Richard Gans, who's the president of Fixed Income Management Group, to share his 35 years of experience in the bond market. Richard has been featured in publications such as the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, and the New York Times. That's this week on the Talking Money Show here on the Talking Money Radio Network.
Listen to the Talking Money Radio Show every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on WSMN 1590 AM, Nashua's News and Talk radio station.
The Exquisite Corpse, a very unusual and completely amazing story pieced together out of so many parts that it is not possible to describe them all here, so go ahead and just start reading. The full moon lights the silver rails winding around dark mountains and over steep gorges of jagged rock and one freezing cold rushing black mountain river. I wish there was enough time to describe all of the funny twists and turns, especially the elephant clown party, that led up to now, but there isn't enough time because there is a ticking clock. And the two passengers we care most about don't know anything about it. In a sleeping berth in the third car from the end of the train are two children, 11-year-old twins who have just run away from the circus. The girl's name is Nancy, the boy's name is Joe. They have no idea that those are not their true names, though they will figure it out soon enough. To see what happens next, visit read.gov to read The Exquisite Corpse, a riveting adventure pieced together by John Sheska, Shannon Hale, Daniel Handler, and other popular authors. Explore new worlds. Read. This exciting message is brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
So coming to the stage is a really funny guy. Y'all know him. Put your hands together. Give it up for George Wilborn.
Folks, why won't we go to the doctor? My uncle called, speech all slurred, complaining his arm's numb. He calls everybody under the sun, Aunt Peyton, his old army buddy George. He even called my daughter Tierra, because, you know, she's got a year of nursing. Everyone thinks he needs to go to the doctor, including me. So he said, well, will you take me? I'm like, I'm on the road. He goes, I'll wait. Stroke's no joke. If you or someone you love have symptoms of stroke, don't call family. Don't dial a friend. Don't wait. It may be too late. Dial 911. Time loss is brain loss. Seriously, dial 911.
Learn all the symptoms of a stroke at strokesnojoke.org. That's strokesnojoke.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Check on the program schedule or listen live on your computer. It's all at WSMNradio.com.
We're back with Israel is Real on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. Again, we're your hosts, Rachel.
Sonia.
And we're two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Don't forget to visit our website, israelisreal.weebly.com. You can hear our archived shows, listen to music, our playlist, and learn all about our guests, and hear also them speaking again if you've missed it today. Again, israelisreal.weebly.com.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel and informs you of how its technical advances personally benefit you? Did you know Israel's researchers developed a heart pump that saves the lives of people with congestive heart failure? To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
We're going to take a moment to hear a song from our resident musician, Rachel. That's me. You can hear more music at rahelmusic.com, rahelmusic.com. This is Am Yisrael Chai, produced together with Bruce Berger of Rebbe Soul, who will be our guest next week.
Dexter, 2 weeks ago, we had a film producer named Gloria Greenfield with the case for Israel. And our show, and we asked her about the anti-Israel activity on colleges' campuses. Our youth are so extremely vulnerable. How can we help them see through propaganda and know the real facts?
I think one of the things that we have to understand about young Jews in the United States is that they did not live through the Holocaust. They don't remember it. It was a distant historical memory. They didn't live through the 48 war. They didn't live through the 67 war. Ultimately, what they have lived through is the shadow of what I call the Third Intifada, which is the lies told to justify the murder of Israelis during the Second Intifada. And so ultimately, they have come of age during a period of history in which basically lies about Israel have basically just, you know, come awash. And it hasn't, into the West, into the United States. And it hasn't had much impact, I would say, on public opinion. Public opinion in the United States is very strong, strongly in favor of Israel, and has remained so over the years. But it has had a terrible impact, I think, on young Jews here in the United States who take this ferocious criticism of Israel much more seriously. And ultimately, what they've done is that Israel has been portrayed as a monstrous nation. And so and they describe it as a monstrous nation and don't provide any of the history or any of the context. And the question implicit is, who but a monstrous people could claim Israel as its homeland? And so what happens is that young Jews, and this is, I'm kind of guessing on this, but you know, I've been through adolescence, okay, and adolescence is difficult enough. So why would, you know, if I were a young Jew and I was going through adolescence, trying to survive high school, deal with the opposite sex, the last thing I would want to do was to end up having to carry the burden of somehow responding to this rhetorical hostility towards Israel. It's the last thing in the world I'd want to do. And so I think that there are a lot of young Jews, and I've seen this, who have basically tried to distance themselves from Israel, largely because it's just too much of a burden. They don't want to be included in this monstrous group of people that defends this genocidal state in the Middle East.
I want to understand why the elites, the professors, and the best Ivy League colleges are distorting the history. They should know better, no?
This is not the first time we've seen this type of behavior. We saw a lot of this type of behavior in the 1930s when essentially religious elites, particularly here in the United States, denied the threat that was posed to civilization and to the Jewish people by the Nazi regime. And the problem was is that ultimately it took enormous amount of blood and treasure to defeat Nazism. And I think that, frankly, the reason why the elites have refused to acknowledge or accept the fundamental motives for violence against Israel is largely because if there is this violent mass movement that is rooted in part in theology and also in ideology, then you have to ask yourself, okay, now what do we do? And then how are we going to defeat it? And that's really not a question that most people really want to have to ask. And it's not one that they want to have to come up with an answer to. So what happens is that they have decided that, well, the last thing we want to do is confront this ideology head on. And that ambulance siren, that's appropriate. That's appropriate.
I think they're coming. I think
me.
They're doing it.
Okay. The last thing they want to do is confront this ideology head on. So what they want to do is figure out a way to finesse the issue. And one of the ways that you can finesse it is basically, you know, if you'll pardon the expression, throw Israel under the bus.
Throw Israel under the bus. I said, you believe, and we agree with you, that it's time for leaders in the Middle East to abandon the fantasy of Israel's destruction, and we say fantasy. For Muslims around the world, this isn't a fantasy, and we see it growing, and it's actually, it's been said that it's a religious doctrine and ideology. And we also might note that the action of embracing and extending an open hand seems, sadly, just to open a wider door, the door wider to destruction, as seems to be occurring more and more, even on American soil. Do you think that we can believe that this doctrine and ideology, this kind of thing, can change?
I hope so. I think one of the things that we have to accept is that ideological threats to democracy, to pluralism, to you know, religious freedom, and to the West, typically, it may take a long time, end up manifesting themselves as physical threats. And I think, you know, that it took a long time for the elites here in the United States to come to that conclusion before World War II. I think that in varying parts of society, there are still some people, particularly the mainline churches, who think that we can press the reset button, so to speak. And the thing is that how do we promote reform in the Middle East, or how do we promote, you know, the abandonment of this fantasy? And frankly, I think there's a number of approaches or a couple of things that need to be done. And first of all, I think that the Israelis are going to have to make it perfectly clear that I'm Israel High, whether you like us or not, or whether you like it or not, and that ultimately we are going to continue to defend ourselves as ferociously as necessary, and we're going to do what we can to avoid, you know, civilian casualties, but we will defeat you militarily. And I think also, I think in the West, I think we have to make it perfectly clear that we are still committed to those notions of religious freedom, and that ultimately, if you portray yourself on the television as wanting to seek Israel's destruction, and if you call for the murder of Jews on a global scale, that we understand what that is, and we've dealt with that before, and we've confronted it before.
I wonder if you could tell us, I have a couple of questions. We still have a couple of questions, but I'm wondering, we talked earlier about something called the Oslo Syndrome, about negotiating and negotiations. Yeah. And the other question is if you can tell us how CAMRA is also helping disseminate misinformation. Okay.
The Oslo Syndrome, The Delusions of a People Under Siege, is a book by Ken Levin, who is a psychiatrist and a historian. And he documented essentially how the notion or fantasy of Jewish self-reform leading to peace and well-being for Israel became popular, particularly during the Oslo negotiations in the 1990s. And one of the things that he documented was is that there was a refusal on the part of the peace movement in Israel to acknowledge the fact that Yasser Arafat never really abandoned terrorism, and that ultimately he never really lived up to any of the promises that he made under Oslo, and that people who pointed these problems out were regarded as enemies to peace. And I think that this book provides, I think in some ways, kind of like the subterranean key or understanding to what's going on, not just in parts of Israel or in the Jewish community here in the United States, but in parts of the elites throughout the world, even in the mainline churches. The notion that somehow the West can reform itself to make it acceptable into the eyes of its enemies is a very alluring one. It's very seductive, but I don't think it works. And CAMRA, the work that we do, CAMRA was founded in 1982. If you know the history of Jewish organizations in the U.S., essentially it was founded in the response to a crisis. It was founded to basically respond to the distortions in the coverage of Israel's incursion into Lebanon in 1982, particularly at the Washington Post. It was a woman by the name of Winifred Meiselman, who was a social worker down in Washington, D.C., saw the coverage, gathered some people together, and responded to it. Right now, our executive director is Andrea Levin, and what we all do is basically we monitor the media and we look for factual errors. And so, you know, for example, there was a Lutheran bishop here in New England that gave a radio interview a few months ago that basically said that the security barrier completely surrounds Bethlehem. And this is just not true, okay? And so we asked her to make a correction, and she wrote a very ugly response that made it perfectly clear that she thinks that Israel can bring an end to this conflict through self-reform and that the conflict is all Israel's fault. Sometimes we get corrections, and sometimes what we do is we just make it perfectly clear to the readership of these outlets that the people who write for them continually make mistakes. And when that happens, slowly but surely they stop making the mistakes, or at least people are onto them.
We could talk to you, I think, for hours, Dexter. Unfortunately, we only have about 4 minutes left, so we're going to have to finish with that. But we're really,
thank you very
it's
much.
Been really, really great to have you on our show today, and you know, maybe in the future we can have you back and we can talk about more about this.
Absolutely, I'd love that.
But in any case, I know that people can reach you always at CAMRA. Correct.
If you want to send me an email, whether it's a nasty gram or, you know, whatever, it's Dexter, DEXTER, @CAMRA.org. Thanks.
Thank you, Dexter. Dexter Van Zyl. And every week we like to tell you a little bit about the portion of the week, the Torah portion, called Parshat HaShavua.
As the sun sets in Israel, we welcome Shabbat, the Sabbath day. Our Torah portion is Chayei Sarah in Genesis. The lifetime of Sarah consisted of 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. These were the years of Sarah's life. If you were to write a chronology about an important mother in the world, how would you write it? This week's Torah portion, Chayei Sarah, talks about the death of Sarah, the first matriarch of the Jewish people. And even though this portion is a chronology, there are some clues which tell us some of the endearing qualities of Sarah. First of all, Chayei Sarah does not mean the death of Sarah. It means the life of Sarah. What moral did the rabbis find in the title of the life of Sarah? They thought that righteous are calling living even after death, while the wicked are called dead even in life. And so Sarah, the righteous mother of Israel, still lives because her example continues to inspire acts of goodness among her descendants. Shabbat Shalom from Israel Israel.
Shabbat Shalom Israel. Shabbat Shalom here in Nashua, New Hampshire, WSMN's 15 Radio, Nashua's News and Talk. Again, we're on the air every Friday, 9 to 10 in the morning on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We're on the internet, wsmnradio.com. And again, we'd like to thank our guest, Dexter Van Zyl, Christian media analyst for CAMRA. Thank you. And don't forget to visit our website, israelisreal.weebly.com, israelisreal.weebly.com, and send us your feedback, please, at israelisreal1590@gmail.com. Thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom. Israel is real.
Home of New Hampshire's Merit Award winner for Air Personality of the Year, George Russell, 1590 WSMN, Nashua.